Today on Movie Rollers, we talk about Dave Chappelle, 846, The Five Bloods, Lennox Hill, and Just Mercy. It's time for Movie Rollers. Hi, this is Joe.
Hi, it's Rashmi.
And Yosdi as well.
Movie Rollers is your weekly dose of film reviews, movie news, and general banter in theatres, on DVD, online streaming, or in the back of an airplane. If you love the movies, this show is for you. Greetings, fellow Wallers.
Hello.
Hello.
So, first, an apology. We've had some real challenges recorded, and they say me, as the official Movie Rollers sound engineer with zero sound engineering training. We've had some real difficulties in the last few episodes with sound quality, so hopefully this one sounds a little better. We're doing something a little bit different. My MacBook has also gone back to Apple to be reprogrammed and retrained in the Gulag style, so hopefully it will know better next time. But yeah, just wanted to apologize to our listeners for what has been really an exercise in patience to listen to, because it's been a bit sucky, you know. So hopefully this will be better, and I'll keep working on it, and hopefully within the not too distant future we can do some sort of socially distanced but together recording session.
Well, we are no longer socially distanced.
No, I've had to let Rashmi into my personal space.
I am
yes,
but yes, Yasti is dialed in virtually here. And so, yeah, we haven't seen you really in the flesh since lockdown started in March.
Gosh, yeah. End of February.
When was our last in-person recording?
I think beginning of March, yeah.
It's been a while.
We miss you, Yasti.
We miss you, Yasti.
Yeah. It seems like a better part of a year has passed since we were doing normal things.
We are a quarter year older.
Well, the good news is that movie theatres are potentially allowed to open, although I looked yesterday and none of the San Diego theatres had actually done anything. So the rules in San Diego currently, movie theatres can open should they choose to do so with no more than 25% capacity and all sorts of social distancing rules in play. So I'm really looking forward to that. I'm hopeful that I can get back to that environment. Although, you know, I think there's still the squeamish side of you know, potential COVID transmission that I've got to get over. But I'm genuinely excited about the prospect of seeing a film on the big screen again with, you know, big ass surround sound and Dolby Vision and all that stuff. So I don't know. I mean, well, we're not there yet. I know, Yasti, I think you feel a little less gung-ho about going to a theatre, but
no, I just want a good report of, you know, what their air filter quality is. I just want to make sure the air is being filtered in there before I step in.
And that they've got a decent cleaning protocol, because I think that's the thing, right? I think if you can go there and feel safe, I would hate to go there and feel like, oh God, am I going to get infected with something horrible?
Well, it's the minute that you hear the first sneeze or cough that it's going to alarm us, right? It's all well and good until we hear one snivel or one, you know.
Yeah. Well,
piece of phlegm moving somewhere in the movie theater that we're all going to be like, ah, and run with our hair on fire.
And just because I can't go a single podcast without mentioning Christopher Nolan, I'm really hopeful that Tenet is actually being, you know, kicked around as the big harbinger of the rest of the year, right? So they're using that as not the harbinger, that's possibly the wrong term, but it's the canary in the coal mine that, you know, they're if Warner goes ahead and releases that, then we think that the other studios will follow suit and start releasing their big movies as well. But if Warner's pulls it back, you know, then I think we're going to see a lot of stuff get pushed out. So
look, at the end of the day, I think it's going to be a case of we're all going to go to the, it will open. Those of us who are dedicated to going will go. And then someone will get a COVID call saying, you know, we've done contact tracing, you guys should quarantine, and then everything will, you know, change again. So
yeah.
I kind of almost feel like we've got to go with some trepidation, take care of ourselves. But at some point,
yeah,
life will open up again, and it is already opening up, and the rate is going up. But This isn't a podcast about COVID-19, thank God.
I know what Joe means. I think it depends on, you know, people. The studios are banking on, you know, Christopher Nolan doesn't need big name actors. His name is the big name to bring people in, and they're really hoping that he will draw the crowds in. And if there are enough of such setbacks that it freaks out people and they don't show up, then that's going to really impact the release of future films. So I think this really is the big test. So you know, like you, I'm very eager to see how it plays out. And not that it's relevant, but somebody mentioned something to me about the trailer in Tenet, and I saw the latest trailer and I'm already regretting it because I think it gives away too much. So to all our listeners, do not watch the Tenet trailer.
I haven't watched the very latest one. I did see that came out a couple of days ago. Each one has been kind of an event, but...
Yeah, the Indian actress Dimple Kapadia is in it in a featured role, and somebody told me she's in the new trailer. So I was intrigued and I watched it, and that trailer gives away at least one major thing in it. And I was like, wah!
Like any of us can understand any gobbledygook that Nolan puts out anyway.
I think it's going to be a red herring because he's very guarded about his scripts. That trailer wouldn't have snuck by. But anyway, we'll see.
Yes. I think we have fulfilled our podcast requirement to talk about Christopher Nolan.
Thank you.
Although I kept saying to Joe, he should have released it on the 2nd of February this year because then it would have been 02/02/2020 and it would have been like Tenet on the way back. It would have been a palindrome. What a missed opportunity.
And he would have missed COVID and I would have already seen it by now.
Exactly.
So yeah, so many missed opportunities, Mr. Nolan.
But that would have been so cool, right? Together. To get it on 02/02/2020.
And I'm sure if they could, they would.
Yes, there you go.
Oh, well. They missed out on your genius marketing opportunity.
Correct. I'm so wasted. All right.
Well,
I mean, he can wait till one more year and then it'll be 2-1, 2-1.
Yes.
Don't you bloody dare.
No, it'll be 2-0, 2-1. Never mind. 101 years. Never mind. That's too long.
Anyway. It's time to move this podcast along. So we can't see things in theatres, so we haven't been seeing things in theatres.
But we're still seeing new stuff.
It's been great. And, you know, kind of excited to talk about a couple of the entries that we have in this podcast. The Five Bloods is, you know, Spike Lee entry. So, again, this is a movie that I believe would have potentially seen... theatre distribution, though it was picked up by Netflix and distributed so that we can all see it now. So did you want to start there or should we chat about some of the other things?
Well, we can start with The Five Bloods.
Okay.
Yeah, so I can introduce that one. As of this morning, The Five Bloods is the number one most watched show in Netflix, which is saying something considering I don't think Netflix has been very strongly pushing for it. The ads have not been popping up in the last few days at all. So I think just through word of mouth, it got around. And, you know, every new Spike Lee movie is a cause for celebration for film lovers. So The Five Bloods is the latest Spike Lee joint. And it is essentially about four African-American veterans who battle the forces of man and nature when they return to Vietnam, seeking the remains of their fallen squad leader and the gold fortune he helped them hide. And so it has a cast of many, which includes Delroy Lindo, who was also in Do the Right Thing, Jonathan Majors, Clark Peters, Norm Lewis, Isaiah Whitlock Jr., and Melanie Thierry, and of course, Chadwick Boseman is in this as well, as is the legendary French actor Jean Reno. So the movie is written and directed by Mr. Lee, and I think we all saw it very recently, so all of our thoughts should be fairly fresh. What do you guys think about The Five Bloods?
Okay, so I'll start. So it's no mistake that the timing of the release of this movie is so in tune with what's going on in the world as we sit here and record. And I thought about that, and then I thought, well, you know, Spike Lee didn't just make this in the last 3 months or the last month. He made this over a year ago, probably. And so how relevant is it that whenever you make a movie like this, it has a lot to say about what's going on in the world, because the situation in the world just doesn't seem to change. Having said that, and I'll get off my political soapbox, as a movie, I think it has a lot to say about a lot of things, again, as Spike Lee always does. I think the fact that he's tried to blend in history and, you know, some factual information along with this kind of narrative that goes on in the background is interesting. I think the movie has a few concessions that it makes that kind of knocks a point off for me, but overall it's very entertaining. It has a great cast, and I like some of the playful things that he does with the flashbacks, where you see like these older men as they are today in the flashback.
I know why that is.
Okay. So I like that. I like that it's talking about PTSD and the impact that that has on veterans' lives many, many years after. And I think the key that I got from it is that regardless of how many years away you are from a war, the war never really leaves and never really finishes. I think that's the key message that it's trying to say is, you know, let's be careful what wars we fight, because the collateral damage is just incredibly humongous. So overall, I enjoyed the movie. I wouldn't say it's one of his best, but it's very timely and very topical.
So just before I give you my opinion, the whole flashback thing was a budgetary concession.
Ah.
They didn't have the opportunity to film it with, you know, in a true flashback manner. So they just took the older characters and put them in that role. But I thought it was a very interesting visual.
I thought it was poignant to do it that way, actually.
Yeah, no, I thought, again, Spike Lee has such a unique voice as a filmmaker. And I think, you know, when he plays those kind of little, you know, visual storytelling tricks on us, we still get kind of what he's trying to do here. So, this movie was kind of, it felt a little incongruous in many ways to me. It felt like it had so many things to say about so many things that I didn't necessarily take away one message from it. I mean, it's got Spike Lee's usual kind of angry voice of protest theme throughout it, but it's nowhere near as accomplished as Black Klansman, or, you know, a Do the Right Thing, or, you know, a Jungle Fever, you know, any of the kind of the big Spike Lee movies, you know. But with that said, it was seriously enjoyable. I couldn't really grasp onto its overarching theme. You know, it got so messy towards the end, almost Tarantino-like.
Yes.
in terms of its violence. And I don't know. I mean, it felt like, are we talking about Vietnam War, PTSD? Are we talking about race relations issues? Are we talking about, you know, man's, you know, the greed of man, because they all go a little bit nutso over gold bars? You know, I mean, there's, you know, what are we talking about here? But again, it's fabulously entertaining. Just, I'm not sure what it was trying to tell me.
Sure. Yazdi, what did you think?
Bring it together, Yazdi.
So the movie is 2 hours and 35 minutes long. This is a long movie. And certainly Spike Lee takes his time to build the narrative. And he does a lot of interesting things. He uses the same actors who are older now to play their younger versions in the flashback, which is very unusual. I would have thought that he would have picked, you know, younger versions of them, which took me some time getting used to. And then he, you know, I think maybe because of budget restrictions or just creativity, he uses the aspect ratio changes every time. You know, you go from current day to, you know, their past during the Vietnam War. He also kind of has a lot of commentary going on about what's going on right now politically. So yeah, like you said, Joe, he has a loaded cart here in terms of what he wants to bring across the checkout line. I personally had a problem in the first 15 to 20 minutes of the movie because I could not shake off the feeling of artifice. Like the whole part when these veterans show up in Vietnam, it all seemed like everything was done on the fly. It felt, I had a really hard time, even though it was shot on location in current day Saigon, it felt to me like it was artifice. I did not believe those characters. And it took a long time for me to kind of, because there's so many characters, right? And each one of them has their own little strings of things attached. So it felt more like a, you know, like a playbook, like somebody was reading from a play than actual characters. But I think that problem was, you know, as the movie got into it, the meat of it, it kind of went away. The movie is clearly very, very influenced by many other previous movies. Apocalypse Now, The Treasure of Sierra Madre, you know, with all of these movies which were about either people, soldiers going off to war and finding that war is hell, or people heading out to find some kind of treasure and kind of having an adventure. And this movie is kind of a mishmash of those two genres. So it's very, very entertaining. And I think it does pack a punch. It's incredibly powerful, especially, you know, towards the last half. He does something that he has not been doing through his career, but only started with Black Klansman. He repeats it again here, which is that he kind of bookends the movie with real life characters. And actually not just that, during the course of the whole movie, there are all these stills, you know, from news, et cetera, about mangled bodies, et cetera. And I understand what he's trying to do. That device didn't work for me as well in Black Klansman. It didn't work for me. It worked for me even less here. But I completely understand where he's coming from and what he's trying to do. It just kind of, I just wanted him to say his piece about these five people and then let people make their own projections about how that fits into the narrative today. So it's kind of a mixed bag for me, but I think it's so, so ambitious. And I don't know if any other actor any other director with the current limitations in funding, with studio systems not paying for this, making something so ambitious. So I give him props.
Yeah, I think either it was too ambitious or he didn't have enough time. It kind of felt a little rushed in terms of the actual storytelling. And I felt as if it was almost, considering it's a long movie, it was a little underwritten. I was shocked at how underwritten it was in some places. And again, it kind of felt like, you know, a lot of concessions were made. You know, I'm going here and then suddenly they're where they need to be. And then it all comes together. So it's not as smart as I would expect from someone from Spike Lee, but I don't know whether he's maybe rushed the editing to get it out now or whether this was the predicted timing it was supposed to be out because of what's going on. So I can wind this one up. Look, this isn't a waste of your time at all. It's definitely a worthwhile watch. I would give this a 7 out of 10.
Okay, I mean,
Joe?
Yeah, look, there's too much in here, for sure. And yes, there's a 2.5 hour running time, which, you know, allows the movie, presumably, you know, enough. But I think even then, there's too many things that are being that the director's trying to say, too many things that they're trying to do with the characters, too many things that, they're trying to just do and say constantly throughout the movie. So, but with that said, I just found the whole thing, you know, funny at times.
You were laughing out loud.
Dramatic at times. Because there's some really great jokes in there. There's some very great observational things, you know, political sensibilities of certain characters and, you know, the proclamations that they make. The way that they behave under various circumstances, and, you know, the plot neatly weaves in and out and slowly reveals these little nuggets which kind of help you understand their behaviors. But so again, finely crafted. I'm going to give it an 8 out of 10 because I had so much fun watching it. I don't think it's anything that we will necessarily write on to Spike Lee's filmography as one of his classics, but you know, fun nonetheless. 8.
Yasti.
Yeah, I mean, I'm really struggling with this because, like you, Rashmi, it does seem a little unfinished to me. And I don't know if it's because it's just, I think it is because it's so overly ambitious. I mean, he has all these side plots, you know, there are side plots of people in Vietnam who go with them. There's this whole other side plot of this group of, you know, workers who are trying to detonate, you know, leftover mines from the Vietnam War. And they're all characters that they interact with. There's the past and there's the present. One of the guy's sons joins them and he has his own story. And so there's a lot of stuff to carry through. And in spite of the 2.5 hours, it feels like a lot of the dots were connected. And I wonder if there's a longer cut somewhere. And I almost wonder if, you know, considering that this was going to come out at Netflix, you know, why not just do a 3-part, like, you know, like 1.5 hour each or something, and just tell the whole story? Because this is a journey. This is a journey in the adventure movie sense. This is a journey in terms of the emotional sense. And this is also a journey in terms of what you find out eventually, in terms of, you know, what had transpired. So it did feel a little rushed. A lot of people are calling it the best movie of the year so far. I don't know if I agree with that. I give it a lot of props because
I was going to say that's only because there have been three movies released, probably.
Ouch.
I mean, it's not difficult at this point.
I mean, it is a very angry movie, as Spike Lee movies always tend to be. And it's a very, very personal movie. And so I don't think people make enough personal movies because the studio system prevents you from doing that. So I want to give it a lot of praise for that. I'm so thrilled. I live in a world where Spike Lee is making movies. So 7.5 out of 10, which I'm going to bump up to 8, although this movie is probably not going to make it into my, you know, year-end best movies list. But who knows? Maybe we won't have any movies released this year.
That's right.
In which case it will.
And it will be in your top 3. Yes. I have to say, though, amazing performances by Delroy Lindo, who plays almost the main protagonist, and then also Clark Peters, who plays the character Otis. So those were standout performances for me. I think that the Delroy Lindo was a very good performance. A bit overplayed at times, but still very good.
Yeah, I mean, he does. The whole movie rests on his shoulders. The A story is all about him. So, yeah.
I struggled with his performance, to be honest, because I think he did have so much to do and seemingly so little space with all the other characters crammed in to do it. So, yeah. All right. Let's move along. I guess something we could talk about here, maybe we should have put this one up front, is the Dave Chappelle YouTube release. So Netflix... It's a Netflix special, but interestingly, it's been put out on YouTube first. And the title is 8:46, which refers to the 8 minutes and 46 seconds that the police officer Derek Chauvin knelt on George Floyd's neck. And interestingly, you know, in this time of social distancing, you know, Dave Chappelle has put on kind of a live special. It was done, obviously, with a big nod to social distancing. And, you know, there are scenes at the beginning of the setup as well as the, the precautions taken. But it's an interesting monologue. It's available for free on YouTube. Rashmi and I caught this a couple nights ago. Yazdi, I think you've seen it as well.
Yes.
And we thought it merited some, you know, basic discussion here on the podcast. Because love him or hate him, Dave Chappelle has a voice that...
is as unique as Spike Lee's.
Yeah, no, he has... But he's almost this... Despite his humor being, you know, R-rated plus, he always speaks with... You know, I mean, the Dave Chappelle show is kind of a legendary entity. You know, only a couple of seasons of it, but it's always been thought of, you know, very highly. And again, love him or hate him, he definitely has you know, a viewpoint, and he has a wisdom to his comedy that makes you really think. So, guys, what did you think of 8:46?
Yes, yeah, I can. So, you know, the Five Bloods was 2 hours and 25 minutes long. This thing is only 25 minutes long. And I think his actual stand-up routine is maybe 20 minutes or so. You know, he comes across as very, very angry, and he comes across as very impassioned. And a lot of things that he says, you know, he's a very unique voice, not just within, you know, the Black community, but in general, he's a very unique voice in terms of, you know, his view of the world. And I think that's why his specials have always done so well. And you see the same year. So I give this a lot of props, because it is one person's imperfect, angry stream of consciousness talking, you know, about how he feels right now as we are going through this period of social unrest. So on that grounds alone, it's brilliant. Now, all the stuff that didn't work for me, number one is he came across as being really cocky. He came across as being having a lot of swagger, which is fine. I mean, that's his prerogative. But I think what really bothered me is he came across as disorganized. So, you know, he clearly has something to say, but he had not thought through how he's going to say it. And so he kind of keeps looking in this book, which he's brought with him, where presumably he has notes, but then he doesn't do it. He kind of lights a joint on the stage, and it's a free country. You know, he can smoke whatever he wants. But he keeps trying to light it, and it doesn't light. And it just comes across, he came across very anxious and very kind of uncomfortable on that stage, which is the last thing I would expect from Dave Chappelle, is being uncomfortable being where he was. So, you know, we almost seem to have caught him talking to maybe his family members without necessarily, you know, planning and doing a show that will be released as a special. So I really wish he would have maybe even spent a little bit of time in organizing his thoughts and then gone from A to B to C to D. So a mixed bag, but again, I commend him for his, you know, saying it how it is.
So that's interesting, Yazdi, because I actually loved the performance for the reasons that you didn't like it. So my take on it was that he felt obliged to say something. And so he could have either just taken a cell phone and taken a video of himself in his bedroom, but he chose to do it with an audience. And I think there is a consciousness about him that says, I'm just not doing a regular stand-up routine. I'm here to tell the world what I think of this situation because you want to hear from me. And so I kind of almost let him off for being a little disorganized and a little bit more off the cuff and a bit more casual than he would have been on a, you know, well-lit stage with a full arena full of an audience. I think he has the ability to tell things as they are, and that's why those of us who love his voice and will enjoy this, because it, and enjoy is a weird term, right, when you're talking about the death of a person unjustly. So it's a very weird subject matter in essence to be preaching about, but this felt more like a something that someone would get up and say in a park corner in the middle of protesters versus like a Netflix special. So I think if you go into it thinking you're going to almost see something virtually that you would hopefully see at a rally or a protest, then I think if you approach it in that way, it's more palatable. I really was, I find him to be able to say things that I wish I could say. And I just found it very interesting to hear his point of view.
Yeah, I mean, this isn't a review. as opposed to, you know, just a few thoughts. And much like Dave Chappelle, you know, I think that a lot of this stuff that is happening in the world right now is difficult to talk about. It's difficult to have discussion, debate. And I was really interested by kind of how he started with the monologue, in the sense of he said, you know, I've been quiet on this stuff. I've been deliberately not talking about this in a public way because, you know, this is for the people to rise up and to show the world that, you know, this is something that needs to be changed. So, you know, I felt almost like he felt at this point that he had to come out and say something, because by not saying something, he's almost, you know, passive about the way that the world is burning right now. And that's clearly not the case. In fact, like yesterday, I found him to be so angry at several points in this that I felt like I was being yelled at by my parents. You know that? You know that moment as a kid when your parents raise their voice and you really sit up and listen because you know that they are truly, truly emotionally
like they're about to charged. Beat you outside.
Well, it may or may not have been something I did, but no, they're it's clearly like, you know, you being party to somebody who is very, very emotionally charged about what's happened. So I don't know. I mean, it's unpolished. It's rough. I think it's important that we heard from him. Like you yesterday, I wish that he had maybe, like me, rambled a bit less and got to the point a bit more. But nonetheless, I think, you know, hearing him say the things that many of us think, using words that really cut to the heart of the matter, is important. And for that, I applaud him. So let's move on to the next movie that we wanted to talk about this week, which is Just Mercy.
Yep. So I have the intro to that. So this is directed by our dear, dear friend, local director from San Diego, Destin Daniel Cretton. And it's written by Destin and Andrew Lanham. And it's actually based on the book by Brian Stevenson, whom this film is about. So the movie is about well-renowned civil rights defense attorney Brian Stevenson, who works to free a wrongly condemned death row prisoner. And it stars Michael B. Jordan, Jamie Foxx, and Brie Larson, amongst a whole host of others. And unfortunately, this one got lost in the Oscar mix at the end of last year. This was released around November, December of 2019. But I think we didn't talk about it. It was one of the many screeners that Yazdi and I made our way through. But it seems timely. It's just been released on Netflix. And it seems, again, very timely to talk about this. So with that, Joe, why don't you start us off? Just Mercy.
Sure, yeah. So it's been a while since we saw this. I saw this, like you, Rashmi, on a screener sometime late last year. And the movie has definitely stayed with me. I think really the strongest aspects of the movie are the story it's telling. And we have, you know, some terrific performances by Michael B. Jordan and Jamie Foxx, who, you know, he's not an actor that I necessarily love. I think he's very uneven in terms of his resonance with me as an actor. But nonetheless, you know, this is one of those movies that I think has such an important story of injustice to tell. And, you know, given the times that we're in, the current temperament of the country and the world, its release on Netflix is something that I think, you know, is timely and is easy to kind of recommend. So, Yazdi.
Yeah, I mean, I'd seen it originally right around the you know, the rush at the end of the year to, you know, to finish up watching movies before we voted for the San Diego Film Critics Society, and then, you know, I'd maybe watched two other movies that day, and it kind of registered as it did. And then earlier this week, I kind of watched it again because, you know, a lot of the New York Times has been recommending the podcast Pop Culture Happy Hour. A lot of people have been recommending shows and movies to watch right now, which pertain to, you know, social unrest, which pertain to, you know, the African-American experience. And, you know, Just Mercy came up enough that I think the studio now has made the movie available for free on YouTube as well as Netflix, of course, where it's streaming. So I saw it again. And I must say, you know, when I saw it with where we are standing right now, it particularly resonated for me. I think when you're making a movie like this, you can either get, you can either do a very earnest, very sincere, you know, angry kind of a movie about how things are going, or you can try and be clever about it and smart about it or satirical about it. And, you know, this particular filmmaker, he follows the former route, which is he just tells the story very straight up, you know, very sincerely. And it's hard to do that because you may come off seeming like you're trying to make saints out of these characters. And so that's a very, very fine line to walk. But I think the movie really manages to kind of walk that fine line. And, you know, there's been a lot of talk right now, you know, in terms of the George Flynn murder, you know, that maybe it's just a bad apple and that not all, all policemen are bad and not this and that. And then, you know, actually more white people have been killed than black people and so forth. So there's a lot of facts and spinning and things going around. And I think for all those who are arguing that this is a flash in the pan, this doesn't happen very often, this is yet another movie which says, nope, it's always been happening. This is a systemic issue. There is systemic racism. And I think the movie draws its strength mainly by virtue of exceptionally fine performances from both Michael B. Jordan as well as Jamie Foxx. And it just straight up tells the story, how it played out. And I think if it doesn't affect you, you know, then I don't know. I mean, it really, really very fundamentally affected me, more so than I had seen it, maybe at a time when we were not as sensitized to what's going on around the world right now. But considering that the movie is free right now, and it's, even if you have no say one way or the other about the whole racial experience, I think it's just a fine movie, finely directed with fine actors about a piece in history. So it's definitely worth watching.
Yeah, I was going to say, I completely agree with what Yazdi said. I think, you know, these movies come along and sometimes you watch them and you're like, oh, this is an interesting piece of fiction, or this is a good story that's being told. And then you realize it's actually based on reality and it just blows you away. And so I think just the fact that it is based on a true story that's actually written by the lawyer himself makes it worth a watch anyway. And then I think, like you said, Yazdi, it's subtle. It doesn't hit you with a hammer. It kind of leads you down a path and it's impactful. I think it just got lost in last year's end of year shuffle. And I wish that now when it's got a bit of time to breathe and it's in this environment, I think it will get the kudos that it deserves. Yeah, very, very good movie. Very well produced and very well acted and you know, an important story to tell.
Yeah, one again, it's available on streaming, you said, Yazdi, for free, which is again remarkable given the times and the caliber of the you know, this isn't kind of, you know, one of those budget movies that was, you know, thrown out. This was an Oscar contender, yeah. I think. And it's too bad that you know, I think they tried to play the game of the release timing and you know,
it was a good year. Unfortunately, it was too good a year.
Yeah. No, I mean, not that this was necessarily Oscar bait, but, you know, I think the baiting game as it's played can sometimes do movies a disservice. And I feel like this one, had it been released with a lot less competition in terms of, you know, it gets very crowded at the end of the year. So I wish it had kind of a February release where it could have you know, had room to breathe and be seen by more people, but you know, that's resolved now with streaming. Great. Okay, so then
I wanted to mention one more.
Yeah, please go
Netflix,
ahead.
Netflix one more Netflix show, since we're kind of on the streaming part of the show.
Yeah, so Lennox Hill is a series that has just been released on Netflix, and Rashmi, I know you have been watching it. Just very briefly, it's a documentary web television series that was released on Netflix, and its premise is that it revolves around the lives of four medical professionals in the areas of neurosurgery, emergency medicine, obstetrics and gynecology at the Lennox Hill Hospital in New York. So it's been incredibly well received. I think it's running right now around 100% on Rotten Tomatoes with nine reviews. Are you going to be the 10th positive reviewer here, Rashmi?
I will be the 10th positive reviewer here. So this is absolutely worth your time if you like dramas about real people. And it's really the docuseries, not a drama. I mean, I think what I take away from this is it has a lot to say about the health system or the unhealth system in the US, about the desire and the egos that some of the main researchers, doctors have in hospitals, how a hospital works, how you can get caught up in bureaucracy, how the lives of these doctors are all consumed by being doctors and treating patients, and almost how the rest of their life just falls by the wayside because these are such dedicated people. And that sounds so trite, but it's a really good docuseries about, you know, a gritty hospital in New York and some of the challenges that they face, not only from the perspective of, this small two-bit hospital that's kind of grown organically, and how do you attract the best talent there? But then also the fact that it's in an underserved community and the challenges that brings, and socioeconomics, and then just about the lives of these really amazing people that do amazing things. Yeah, it's a great docuseries. It's really, really, it's a slow burn. Nothing much really happens in each episode, but the fact that you're just watching real people's lives with real challenges and just the juggling act that they have to do every single day of their lives makes our real jobs look insignificant. So it's a really good docuseries. Yeah, really good. I would definitely recommend this one.
Yeah, I'm really eager to watch it. Not just because we're in the medical field, but I think, it's the kind of thing where right now the medical, in light of what's been happening with COVID, the medical profession has been put up through a lot of scrutiny in terms of what they're doing right and wrong, and if they're adequately funded and so forth. And so I think a very detached documentary kind of, which looks at, a practice of four different people would be very valuable as an objective piece of filmmaking that you can then make your own decisions on.
Great. Yeah. Well, it's out on Netflix
it
now.
It is out. Just came out. Yeah.
Yeah. Like I say, Rashmi, I know you pretty much chewed your way through it as quickly as I've seen you watch anything as of late, except for, binge watching on overnight transatlantic flight. So it speaks a lot to, how much you enjoyed that. And,
yeah.
And I might have to give that a view as well. Okay.
One more other noteworthy one, I think, that's just come out on Netflix around what's kind of going on and relevant to the Black Lives Matter movement is a movie called Mudbound, which came out in 2017. If you remember, this is the one that Mary J. Blige was actually nominated as Best Actress for through that award season. It basically tells the story of, two men, an African-American and a white American who return home from World War II to work on a farm in rural Mississippi, where they have to struggle and deal with racism and kind of adjusting to life after war. And then it tells about the whole story of, African Americans who were basically, slaves, so to speak, and had to fight in the war, and some of the freedoms that were afforded that to them through war in other countries, and then what they had to face when they came back to the South. So it's a really interesting movie from that perspective. And I know, Yazdi, I think you really enjoyed this one as well, and we may have done a review on it some years ago, but Mudbound is that movie.
Yeah, I love this movie. I think this is another film which came out late November, early December, a few years ago, and again got lost in the shuffle with the larger profile year-end movies. It's directed by Dee Rees, and it has absolutely brilliant performances all around. You know, Carey Mulligan, who we haven't heard of recently, is so good in this, as is Mary J. Blige, as is Garrett Hedlund. And I think the movie's great accomplishment is that, you know, the name of the movie is Mudbound, and it really immerses you in the lives of these people from quite some while ago. And you can really feel, you can feel the heat, you know, of the area. You can feel the mud.
It's very dry, yeah.
It's very dry. And to the movie, and to the movie's great credit, it's not this giant diatribe against racism. It is in a way, in that some characters in it are just, you know, maliciously, malignantly violent, maliciously, malignantly racist. But then there are others, you know, like most human beings, you're complex, right? You can have some racist undertones, but at the same time, you are capable of learning, and you're capable of, you know, adapting to what you learn. And so it's not saying, you know, all white people are bad, all black people are saints, nowhere near it, but it's just saying this is how things were. And when the right opportunity came up, the right people did sometimes do the right things. And it just, it has an epic-like feel. You feel like you've known these lives, you've kind of lived with them, like you were born in that time. And that's, you know, considering how short the movie is, that's quite something. So I'd really strongly recommend Mudbound. It's a fine piece of filmmaking.
Terrific stuff. Okay, any other recommendations from what you've been watching? I mean, there's a lot to talk about. Maybe we can do a full-on Netflix recommendation, streaming recommendation show coming up, but any other little gems you want to throw in there?
I have one final one. It's actually an Indian movie called Razi, R-A-A-Z-I, or Z-I.
Oh, yeah.
Which is actually, again, based on a true story about a Kashmiri woman who agrees to marry a Pakistani army officer in order to spy on Pakistan during the Indo-Pakistan War of 1971. And this is just an amazing movie with a great performance by Alia Bhatt. It's directed by Meghna Gulzar and written by Harinder S. Sikka. It's actually based on a book called Calling Samet. And Samet is the main protagonist, you know, who as a young girl was basically, you know, her father bestowed upon her that she was going to have to move to another country, marry a stranger, and spy on the family on behalf of her country of birth. So it's a really interesting thriller, I would call it. Superb. Really enjoyed this one. So I'll say it again. Razi, R-A-A-Z-I or Z-I.
I'll put a link to it in the show notes. But yeah, I watched this one. I'll put a link to it in the show notes. But I watched this with Rashmi as well. You put it on, and I had no intention of actually sitting down to watch a movie. But within a few short minutes, I recognized that this was something that, you know, was done with real care and attention. And, you know, yeah, there are a kind of couple of, you know, typical spy movie concessions at the beginning, such as, you know, the spy training montage and the,
yes,
you know, the hand-to-hand combat stuff. And it comes off as a little kind of clownish. But with it being a foreign language movie for me, at least, I kind of gave it a pass for that. And when it drew me into its real story and its real world, I was hooked. So I couldn't actually step away from this, despite having many other things that I wanted to try and get done that day. This one pulled me in and kept me through to its conclusion.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of the movie. And I've been long saying that the last 5-7 years have is kind of almost a golden period in Indian cinema, because they're doing very unusual, very provocative stuff that you wouldn't have dreamed of earlier. This is yet another example of that. And I agree with you, the movie almost always walks that line, except there are a few occasions where it kind of, you know, gives concession to kind of more commercial interests. And I, towards the end, you know, it seemed to kind of take a side, and I really didn't want to take a side. I didn't want the movie to take a side between India and Pakistan and just leave it as a story of what happened with this woman. But it does take a side, which I think takes away from the movie. But, you know, for those who are not familiar with that part of Indian history or who just want to watch a great film, Alia Bhatt is remarkable.
She's great.
Yeah. The only other one I want to recommend is, you know, with the whole Black Lives Matters protest going on right now, Netflix, maybe they always planned it, or maybe right now is the right time, but they are streaming the movie The Help, which came out, gosh, 3-4 years ago. I remember watching it with our friend Sandy in the theater. And, you know, The Help was one of my favorite books. You know, it just reads really well. It may not be high art, and it was difficult to make a movie version of it. And I think they really came, you know, they met the task reasonably well. And I think the movie has been maligned a lot since its release as being one more of the white savior kind of movies, where the white character comes and ultimately helps out the black characters. And I've always held that that's actually not the right interpretation of the book. The first and last chapters of the book, and many chapters in between, are actually written by the Viola Davis character. So it's her story. She's the one who's talking about it. She just happens to have, you know, people who help her at different times. So it may be very, very true for other movies, but I really chafe at people calling The Help a white savior movie. It's not. You need to watch the movie. It's fun. It's got great acting. You know, people we didn't know so well at that time, they've all gone on to have very illustrious careers. You know, Octavia Spencer certainly won her first Oscar. You know, so did Emma Blunt eventually. Emily Blunt, sorry, not Emily Blunt, Emma Stone. I'm getting all my...
I knew who you meant.
But it's just a fun movie. It really moved me, and that movie is also on Netflix right now.
Yeah, no, I really enjoyed that one too. That's interesting that you brought that one up, because when I think of The Help, I think of a very colorful, saturated, almost Disney-fied look. And
yes.
The time was so much more bleak than that for many of the characters, but it tells its story in a way that I think is accessible and understandable to all. And I think, you know, the most important thing here is, you know, this is a side of history that we should never, you know, shy away from talking about. And I think it does it very well. Okay, I think we're coming up to an hour, so let's draw this podcast to an end. Thanks everyone for listening. Hopefully the sound quality is a little better this time around than before. We're still working on that. So if you're listening and you've listened this far, thank you for your patience. We appreciate you, all of you, every single one. And that includes even you who's driving right now, listening to this podcast in your car.
Or working out.
Or hiking. Or perhaps just lying in bed listening to a great podcast. So thank you very much. We appreciate your support. Too many movies, too little time. A goodbye from me.
And me.
And me as well.